I got you there, Colin.
What's up, man?
Hello. All right. Yeah, I'm digging it. I'm looking forward to talking to you about what other stuff, you know, other than the event. Is there any other news we need to get caught up on? We got a couple hours here, man, so let's do it.
Yeah, dude, I give you an update on it, wherever Nexus has been going, like where our code is, kind of some of the designs and everything. Everything's moving along pretty cool, dude. You got lots of cool stuff.
Are you at your computer actually writing stuff?
Yeah. I've coded ridiculous amounts of code over the last little while.
Oh, my God, look at that hair. Holy crap. All right, wait a minute. Everybody got to see this. Push the button. All right. There's Colin, man. He's gone all hipster here, man. Right on. How hot is it?
Oh, it's like maybe 70, 80 right now, 90.
Are you in the valley? So, yeah, it's early there.
Yeah.
Now.
Okay. Yeah, I can't tell anymore, man. Like, it's like when it's like 120 and still, you know, I just sweat a little bit more.
It's just whatever. Yeah, no, it's, I know what 115, 120 feels like. It's like opening the oven, you know. Mm-hmm. All right. So we'll go ahead and I'll do an introduction of you real quick. You can tell us about Nexus in the first segment. Just get that out of the way and what's up with that and give me some whatever. And then we'll get into the event next week. And I'm glad you're doing this. Why did you? You know, I'm going to save all these questions. I got 5 billion questions. All right, we got a couple hours. I want to, you know, let me just go ahead and we'll do the break, and we'll be back in like 2 minutes. And you can tell I got 5 billion questions for you. I'm going to rapid fire everything. But the first thing is, get us an update on Nexus and what's going on in the crypto world and all that. Okay.
Cool.
All right, we'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
And a beard here on Declare. You're independent from me, you're in Stancock, here in Hanover, New Hampshire still. We're going to be going back. We're going to State College, Pennsylvania, Friday. And then we're going to be going to back to Arizona just in time for an event that we're going to be participating in at Planetary Conjunctions 2020, which is Colin Cantrell is putting on. We're going to hear all about that. We're going to have us some fun. We're going to understand what's up. And but Colin Cantrell, good friend, back in Arizona, in the heats of 120 degrees of, but you got a pool, you're good. And then what I want to talk to him about first is Nexus. Now, Nexus Earth, Nexus.io is his thing, his crypto, and he's back working on it and pounding on the keyboards. And we need to get an update on that before we go into all this other stuff. So, Colin, give us one. Oh, wait. I got to show you what he looks like. He's got all Jesus on his, man. Look at that hair. Woo! Looking good. All right. Go ahead and tell me everything about Nexus.
Yeah, so we've made a lot of progress lately. It's really cool to see it kind of evolving because we're developing this framework, right? A framework is just, think of it as just a toolbox, right, for a programmer that has all these different tools and technologies built into it. So the blockchain is kind of one aspect of this framework that gives us all of these capabilities. So it's been really cool to see everything really coming to life because the foundation, as you know, like over the last few years, we've just been doing foundation work. And now a lot of that foundation work is actually complete and it's really
okay. Started. Foundation, not as in the, you know, Bill and Melissa Gates Foundation, but you mean foundation.
Yeah,
okay.
The software. Yeah, like the foundation of the structure, because the software structure is similar to a physical structure, right? I mean, you have all these different components to it, and you have to have the strong foundation in order to build something that's going to last, right? So I've been working on the lower level library and the Tau framework for, I think we've been doing foundation work for about 6 years now. So I mean, it's about time to start, you know, breaking through the surface. So some of the things that we've actually just implemented already is a crypto API, right? So what this allows people to do is work with encryption without having to manage private keys. So you can encrypt and decrypt files using just your crypto object register, right? And you can actually do exchanges and peer swaps and things like that. So that with just a simple, like, I mean, Ernie could do it if you just use a web browser. You just type something into the web browser and boom, you have encryption.
So the grandpa just button.
A grandpa just button for encryption, or for developers, a grandpa developer just button, right? Mm-hmm. So that we can give access to all of these cryptographic systems to just regular developers without having all that key management issue, right? So you know how you have your sigchain on Nexus now where your username, password, and PIN, you log in, and from that, we can actually create all these different encryption keys. And so you don't have to make paper wallet backups. You don't have to, you know, store. I mean, I think right now, the last statistic I heard was like 20% of all Bitcoins have been lost. Right, because somebody's lost the private keys, a hard drive dies, or you know, someone's girlfriend doesn't like the miner fan being on, and like, I mean, there's tons of stories like that, right? And that's just a huge inhibitor to adoption. So that's why we developed sigchain architecture, where you basically have a username, a password, and a PIN. But we've taken that to the next level. Instead of just using it for, you know, using your cryptocurrency, you can now actually use it to manage encryption and decryption, for, you know, any different type of application. And then that ties together with the peer-to-peer API, which is another really cool API, which essentially creates an authenticated connection that's secured with SSL and uses your crypto object register to basically protect against man-in-the-middle attacks. So what you end up happening is now you can open up, I can send to your username, right? I can say Ernie, and send an actual message to you where you have to accept this message, and we don't have IPs anymore when you're doing this peer-to-peer API. It essentially just allows you to open up a direct connection to somebody else. But I'm, as far as I'm aware, there's no APIs or frameworks that actually are capable of doing this. I think I saw like Matrix, the Matrix messaging that Riot's built on and stuff. But so this is like another really powerful tool because now dApps can communicate with one another securely. You can transfer a file.
Okay, now, yeah, wait. Let me ask some questions on, I mean, you're getting all Colin geeky as you always do. But, you know, you did find, there's something in there I found of interest I want to drill in on.
Yeah.
So the problem with, you know, different protocols is that you're going through the third man thing. You're going through the ISP of the blah, 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 blah. What you're saying here is that you have a mechanism by which you can connect directly between computers and send ones and zeros.
Yeah, and what it also does,
is that even allowed? I mean, you know, there's that, you know, you may think it's easy and you do it, but there's the man sitting there going, oh, hell no. You're so freaking not allowed to do that. You know,
they won't like it. And I mean, but the cool thing about it is like we've completely removed all middlemen, because like when you go to a website and you have, you know, you type HTTPS, that stands for secure, right? SSL. What you're doing is you're actually doing encryption over that, but you have to access this public key database, right? Which certificate authorities like Symantec, Komodo, all of them, they basically keep this database of public keys to say, okay, well, this key is Ernie's key, and you know that. And they have to have this public key database, otherwise a man-in-the-middle attack can happen where somebody can just exchange. And if you don't know what certificate belongs to what person, then the cryptography is meaningless, right? And somebody just man-in-the-middle attacks you. So what this ends up doing is it is using the crypto object register to secure the certificate, so you don't need certificate authorities anymore, right? And this is part of our SafeNet architecture. So you won't need to go buy an SSL certificate anymore, because you have this authenticated system with the crypto object register where you're using the blockchain more as your public key database, and that doesn't require.
Okay, no, I'm following you so far, but this is the one thing. When a browser goes and he says, oh, no, there's security certificate. Sometimes, you know, I'm calling Derek. Hey, you know, you forgot the, you know, something and expired of the 30 days. So we're down, you know, an hour of somebody can't go to Freedom's Phoenix because the SSL certificate expired and we forgot something. So, you know, that's happened before, not a whole lot. But, you know, you get that to happen. So then what? You know, that certificate is somebody else certifying something. You know, but it's somebody else certifying. You know, I don't want to certify anymore. You know, I'm like, well, why? Because I don't want to certify anymore. I hate this crap. So you're saying I'm just totally bypass that stuff. It's already secured and encrypted by the end to end. But does the browser recognize that?
this isn't in the web browser. This is all for developers right now. So we need to get browsers to start to recognize that further in the future before you're going to actually start to be able to use it through your web browser, because they're going to have to implement it on the Nexus API to use it, right? But we're using it just on kind of the lower level on this peer-to-peer API, where we're doing this Diffie-Hellman's key swap with the certificate, but we're generating the certificate with your SigChain. So you don't have to manage the key for your SSL, right? But then it'll never expire as well, because you have this certificate that's self-signed, but it's hashed in this crypto object register. So I can authenticate that I'm actually getting your certificate. That's the only thing these
certificates... No. I understand. This is, you know, developer, it doesn't matter. It's the demonstration of the technology is the fact that you can know who you're communicating with.
Yeah.
It is, you know, secure. Whether they recognize it or not, screw them. You know, it's going to be internet 2.0 kiss my ass anyway. So, you know, when this happens, this is the mechanism by which you can avoid and not even worry about it.
Yeah.
Or create your own Nexus freaking browser.
Yeah. Or we're thinking of talking with like the Brave guys. They seem like they'd be the most open-minded to start implementing blockchain logic and root of trust, right? And then the second aspect is not just a certificate, but then you have an authenticated request too. So you not only have to send me a certificate that hashes into your crypto object register, but then you have to sign me a message, right? With a special timestamp that's using one of your other keys from your crypto object register. And that's how I authenticate you. So you have multiple layers of authentication.
Peer-to-peer authentication without the man's permission slip. All right. I'm hip.
All encrypted, right? So what this?
All right, we're going into break, man. You know, chill. So maybe we'll talk about this a little bit more. We got a couple of hours. We'll spend some time on this. But we got a lot of other stuff to talk about too. But Colin, he's looking more and more like a pirate every day. I like it. It's all good. We'll be right back. Yep, palm trees, man. It's all about palm trees.
It's my new interview backdrop. I've been just chilling back here every time. Except for if I do it during the heat of the day, man, my computer like overheats. I have to put this like ice cube under it and shit.
But you got you got a lot of backlight, so you're dark.
Oh, can you not see me?
Maybe you spin around. Or get a darker background.
Let's see. How's that? I guess I can go back there, whatever.
No, just have the house as the background. Just sit there with the house as your background. This needs to be darker. Well, get out of the sun!
There we go. I'll go right here.
Yeah, that's one thing, you know, I'm you know, not missing the direct anvil of the sun, man. You know, it's just, you know, it's, but if you got a pool, you kind of can survive it, you know, it just beats the crap out of it. Yeah, we haven't even had time to miss our home. I mean, we've been so busy, and the bus is, you got to see the bus. It's pretty pimp. Okay, here, I can show this. All right. There's the... You know, the front of the bus. There's the, like, interview couch that we, you know, have people come in. And then there's our control panel with all our solar and all the goodies and everything and monitors and security cameras and stuff. And then, you know, the kitchen. And then we have this table thing that that folds out. And then it folds up. And then you got – here, I think I can see. Yeah, we have storage underneath.
Nice.
And all our crap. And then these leaves fold down, and then all the monitors and stuff. Yeah, here's, you know, my monitor system, you know, and then, you know, all the, you know, radio and crap. And then, back there's the bathroom and bedroom and so on, and there's Donna. And then this is her, like, her producer station here whenever she feels like that. And I got me a whip-ass computer for doing video editing and everything, so I'm going to be... You know, focusing on that. I got, you know, there's a lot of things to do, but we're up at J Noon in New Hampshire, and then we're, you know, got a green screen thing coming that'll go behind us and so on. I wanted to put green screen in the windshield so that I could have, like, you know, you know, Spaceballs, the Winnebago with the Starfield in the background. You know, so we're having fun with it, but we're just still working on it, man. We got it, you know, some, you know, like axle seals we're going to be doing. I got a new steering box that we're putting in to make it a little bit more modern. We got. But we painted it, logoed. Oh, did you send him pictures of the bus or anything? Yeah, go ahead and send him a couple of pictures. You can see it's the Love Bus. It's got the Love Bus logo on it and so on. It's white, and we're having the Jeep that we're pulling. It's being painted while we're back there, and it'll be – yeah, we'll be done here in a month or two getting – and then we're hitting the road and going to a bunch of festivals and spreading the love. But that's exactly what, you know, the conference that you're talking about coming up, you know, it's kind of right dovetails right into that. I'm going to be talking about what we're – same thing. We're of the same mind here. I'm glad to see you're doing that.
Yeah, it needs to be done, man. You kind of
I'm with you, brother. I'm in. You know, I get it. That's exactly. We're going to tell the audience all about it. Is there anything else you wanted to finish on Nexus? You want to get to the other thing?
Whatever you want to do, man. I mean, I could talk about the database. That's another huge.
All right. We're coming back. Here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Hello. All right. Colin Cantrell from Nexus.io is crypto, but he's also putting on an event that is Planetary Conjunctions 2020. It's just, you know, positive waves and screw the man, and we're going to, you know, have fun and get some, you know, the real news of what's going on and the opportunities that are coming up. Positive waves, man, positive waves. I'm with you, Colin. I'm all in. I'm glad to, you know, be able to participate. Now, this is a I wanted to finish up on the – because a lot of the stuff that you are developing, you know, for us to have – pirate communications, for us to be uncensored, for us to be able to have content and sharing of ideas and APIs into, you know, blockchain of blah, 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 blah. Well, that's Colin. Now, if you go to the day's archive, and Donna's put up there previous shows that we've done, and there was one that we did, and on that show was Patrick Byrne. And that show went for 18 hours, edited down to like 9.5 hours, and I still get comments on that show.
People, really?
Oh, hell yeah. A lot of them from your employees. You know, they're just, thank God you did that and had call. Wait a minute, Colin. You're off in the weeds, man. What the hell did you just say? Okay. So, and people have listened to it multiple times. The reason is that for the first time, after 8 years of trying, I had Colin sit there for 18 hours and explain exactly how blockchain works. How Bitcoin works. I go, how do I know how Nexus is better than Bitcoin if I don't even understand Bitcoin? I mean, you know, give me the full, which Colin did. Very patient. Donna fed and, you know, gave us drinks the whole time. We paused the tape. We did a whiteboard about, I don't know, half a dozen times we're going through this whiteboard. And then I kept it up for other people and parties. And the last one, when I finally distilled it and I could explain it back to them, I kept that up. And I went through so many times with people on this. So I can explain it in 5 minutes. I'm at Norcapoco. I got old people coming up and explain and tell me about the grandma version. Let me explain it to you. So I'm able to do that because Colin took the time, very patient, to do that. So when we talk about this, he still gets into Colin land. So I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. What the hell did you just say? So, database. You wanted to share something before we go on. You know, we got the rest of this hour and the next hour, so we're good on time. Talk about the event.
The way a computer works in normal algorithms is usually the bigger the data set, the slower it gets, right? And I'm sure you've noticed that on your computer. As your hard drive gets full, it gets slower. Is, you know, you download more of the Bitcoin blockchain and you know, like the node gets a little bit slower, right? Because you have to search through this data set, right? You have, you know, if you have like 100 items to search through, right? Like you could go between 0 and 100, you could go to 50 and then 75 and then, you know, half and half and half and half. And that's usually the best algorithms that we have. And that's called a logarithm, right? Like a logarithmic time complexity. So that, you know, like a million keys would be like 17 iterations, right? So, but generally speaking, like computers get slower as you have more data. So when we're looking at a blockchain, you know, it is an ever-growing data set, right? It just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so everybody's talking about sharding and sharding and sharding, and that's the way. And sharding is really important, you know, for having really high scalability. But
yeah, oh my God, we should shard if I knew what that was.
I mean, think of it as like you have multiple lanes of traffic right now. A blockchain is like a single lane road. And so, you know, when there's a lot of transactions or cars, then you get a backlog, right? Traffic, you know, backs up. There's only so much capacity, right? So what we're building is the 3DC, which has multiple lanes. Think of it as just like a four-lane highway, right? Where you can fit more cars and they can all pass parallel. That's what sharding is, right? Where you basically have all this parallel processing, you break the entire data set into small chunks and smaller groups of nodes work on each one of those chunks instead of everybody working on this big chunk, right? So that's an important part for scaling, right? And that's what a lot of people I've noticed in the industry are focusing on. But one thing that I haven't noticed very many focus on is the database, right? The database in which you're storing all of these transactions and keys and all that stuff. Now, in a conventional database, it will get slower as you add more and more data to it. So with Bitcoin, you know, that's one justification they had with the block size debate of saying, oh, well, you know, if the blocks are so big, then there's just going to end up growing bigger and bigger so fast that it's just going to get slow, right? So what these cryptocurrencies use is what's called LevelDB, Google's LevelDB, and that's a database that's designed to be able to handle petabytes of data. So they've tested it, as far as I'm aware, up to a billion keys before, and it works, right? But when I tested the LevelDB, like, after I got to about 10 million keys, it went from 1 second writing 100,000 keys to about seven, right? So it lost about seven times the processing capability. And this really ends up becoming your fundamental bottleneck. With a computer, you could have all this computing power, but if you have this little bottleneck, right, that things have to pass through, it doesn't matter how high performance everything else is. So this database kind of becomes this bottleneck, right? And so no matter how great your cryptocurrency is, if your database can't handle it, then it just will not perform. So I've been working on a new database called the lower level database for about 6 years now. Four years. And I've been seeking basically to achieve what's called constant time, which means that no matter how much data you have, it's always going to execute the same speed, right? That is kind of like your holy grail of databases, because databases just get slower when you add more data to it. So your website gets bigger, it gets slower, right? MySQL is notorious for that. It cannot handle very much. I mean, I think MySQL can handle like 1,000 or 2,000, you know, transactions per second, which is like another database. So I actually more recently, over the last few months, managed to get the lower level database completely constant time. Now, I've gotten it to where even if I had up to 12 billion keys in the data set, I would only require three disk seeks. Three.
Okay, right? Three what?
Three disk seeks. So what kills you on a database, right?
What
kills
you? Disk seeks? Is that what
you seek? Yes.
S-E-E-K.
You have to seek, yeah, S-E-E-K. You have to seek to a binary position before you read the data, right? Like when you have that little arm on the hard drive and it's spinning, that thing is actually moving to a binary position and then you read the data from that position. But the seeking, right, the moving to that position on disk is really what dominates your runtime. So when you're doing a binary search tree, right, if you have about 1 million keys, log base 2 of 1 million is about 17, right? So that means 1 million keys with a binary search tree, which is what most databases are built with, would end up being 17 disk seeks, right? Then you get to 10 million keys and you're looking at 20, 22. Then you get to 1 billion keys, you're looking at hundreds.
So right? You're looking at actual physical time limitations of the hard drive. Does an SSD solve a lot of that?
Kind of. I mean, it's supposed
still
to make
doing sense, seeking.
But it's still, seeking still dominates your runtime, right? I mean, I test the lower level.
Okay, we're going into break here in 30 seconds. It's a good place. You know, we'll pick it up when we come back. Okay, remember where you're at. Going into music, man. They're not going to be able to hear you. Okay? Now, this is what happened. When we did our show, the 5 billion year, you know, one that we did, this was one of the bottlenecks that he was talking about. I said, until you explain blockchain and Bitcoin, how do I know how much you're better at? After the 18 hours in the last 5 minutes, okay, now I get it. What makes you better? It was this. He's going, You have all these bottlenecks of this data stream. You got to parallel process all that data, or that will be your limitation. So that's what he's been working on. This is what he's excited about. This is what he saw. We're going to get the full on that when we get back. Colin Cantrell, Nexus.io.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the...
All right, there. See, I needed to, you know, you're going to get into the middle of it and then over the music and everybody yells at me. Okay, so when we come back, we're talking, the seeking bottleneck that you're curing or whatever. So don't forget that. So what, you being a puss? You're getting all hot out there in the anvil sun?
Nah, man, I'm just getting some more coffee.
Oh, okay. All right, we'll be right back.
So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of Liberty.
Your amp will directly change more lives by getting Free Talk Live in front of people looking for talk radio online
and really on the air.
When you amp Free Talk Live.
But it kind of like defies computer science, dude, when you get something like that. I mean, especially when it comes to databases, it's just they're just always going to get slower.
No, like, I remember, you know, to my credit, I recall that being the point that you, I go, so what is the first thing that makes Nexus better than? And you go, it's the parallel processing of the data stream that's coming into the memory pool that the miners take from, because that's the bottleneck. And this was what your solution was to work on this. How accurately do I recall that?
Yeah, you recall it pretty accurately. There's the parallel processing, and then there's also just your data, like your database. That was another huge fundamental bottleneck of Bitcoin.
Well, I mean, you know, so you're just making to where the searching of it is done differently.
No, I don't even search for it, bro. That's
okay.
The
okay, okay. You gotta explain it to me. Not now. Everybody's all pissed off. You know, you get all the good in the
so
break.
Like, mind-blowing, dude, because like I mean even me, dude, as an engineer, like when I finally reached constant time, I was like, oh my god, like this.
Okay, define constant time, that you have a steady speed at which things are processed. What are you talking about?
No matter how much data you have, okay, it's always going to process the same speed.
What do you mean process?
So
the entire data set.
Yeah, if I'm reading, if I want to read one key out of a billion keys, right, I don't have to search through millions of keys to find that one key. I just know exactly where it is.
Well, that's quantum shit. How you doing that?
It is kind of quantum and weird. Like normal computers, yeah, you have to search through this.
Back the truck up, man. I need to know that. You know, you're going, I don't have to search it. Because this is for like web design. You know, I'm up over 400,000 articles on Freedom's Phoenix. When I do a search engine search for stuff, I have to look through 400,000 articles for keywords and doing a. And you're saying I don't have to, or it's going to go at a constant speed of fat. You got to explain that.
Yeah, so we can.
Not now. A minute from now. So where do you live? You're in Chandler?
No, I'm in Ahwatukee, right up Elliott and 48.
Oh, okay. So, I know where that is. Yeah,
I'm right up by the South Mountain. I'm right across from that park, actually.
So, well, hopefully you don't have to commute, because that's like the freaking bottleneck of the bottleneck of the bottleneck.
No, I mean, I just work. So here's my rig.
Oh, yeah. Show me your rig.
Yeah, right here.
I don't know. What are you, old? You can't see? You need a big-ass TV?
Yeah, actually, I do. I mean, my eyesight's not the greatest yet, so... I mean, and I like it for the pixel space. That's a 55-inch QLED curve. So I can fit, like, all my different windows on there. And like, I like it being really big so that I can see it quickly. And it's nice for people when they come work with me because we can look at it right on the screen.
It's like a swordfish thing. I get it.
And I got pixel space is why I got it.
Okay,
so
here we're coming back. Here we go.
LRN.FM. That's shows.LRN.FM.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, but damn it, there's a Colin Cantrell going to explain it to us. Okay, so this is what we're looking at. I'll give you a good example. On Freedom's Phoenix, we have, you know, after 15 years of doing this stuff, we got 400,000 plus, oh my God, articles of whatever. We had, you know, 30-something thousand videos that we've scraped in the IPFS. We got all this enormous amounts of data, but data is getting cheap. I mean, data storage, you know, you can, you know, Staples will give you a 2-terabyte drive to come in to buy, you know, reams of paper. I mean, you know, it's going to be, you know, it's getting cheaper, cheaper, cheaper. The problem is searching it. You know, how do you get around? You're sitting there all day looking for something. Now, what Colin is talking about is that he has come up with a mechanism by which you can search for an encrypted key or data or whatever that it has what's called constant speed. So go ahead and explain that right there to us, Colin. You have the ability to go fast. How?
If we look at, you have 400,000 articles, right? And each one of these articles will have a primary index, right? That's like, what is its name or whatever. And that's just a unique key. So generally, like you talk about, yes, storage is super easy to get. It's really cheap. Yes, it is. The storage, okay? But the data structure in which it's stored in is not, right? So your 400,000 articles, like if they were indexed with a binary search tree, I mean, you're talking about probably 14 different disk seeks that you'll have in order to find it. You'll say, okay, well, is it this key? Nope. Okay, I have to find, is it this key? Nope. Okay, is it this key? You usually go about 14 or 15 of those searches before you find it with a binary search tree. With the lower level database, it's constant time. So it's 3, no matter how many keys you have. So you could have 1 million, it's 3. You could have 1 billion, it's 3. You could have
3 what? Billion. 3 searches, 3 moves on the moves. Hard drive arm, you know, what are you saying?
Yeah, 3 moves on the hard drive arm basically. So you know, now if we went to, you know,
now wait, go back. Why? Why only 3? Why is it 14? Now why is it 3? What did you do to make the difference?
Well, so I combined together a lot of different technologies and used it in a very different, unique type of way. In order to achieve this, so that basically I made everything deterministic. So instead of having to search, right, and say, okay, well, this key may be here, so I'm gonna have to search here. Oh, it may be over here. Okay, well, I'm getting closer. It's kind of like narrowing the search. Okay, I start here. Oh, closer, 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 key, right? That's how a normal database works. With this, it's just like, boom. It just knows where it is.
See, there you go. I knew you'd do it. You just.
That's what's so cool about it.
Well, tell me about this just that you guys keep going over. So instead of it narrowing it down, you know, you're going step, step there, step, step there.
Yes.
How? Why?
Okay, so I do it with a hash map. So you take the key. Remember the hashes, right? You take the key, hash that key. Right. First. And then you do what's called a modulus. Modulus is like a remainder. So like 10 modulus 9 is 1 because 10 with a remainder of 1, right? 10 divided by 9, it has a remainder of 1. That's what modulus is. Then, you know, 11 mod 9 is 2, right? 12 mod 9 is 3. So modulus is really important. And it's also used a lot in cryptography. So you have this, you hash it into a bucket, right? Now, this bucket can also have a collision because something else can hash into that bucket too. So you have to resolve these collisions. So I use a couple techniques. One of them is linear probing. I'll check the next bucket and say, are you open? And if that's open, then I'll use that one, right? But if it's not, then I have another hash map. So the hash maps sit like this, right? And then if you have a collision, you have to search usually 1, 1, 1, 1. And that's how it works right now. But I more recently over the last few months implemented a very unique way to use Bloom filters, right? Which tells me this definitely is not in this file, or it may be in this file, right? And I use that in order to isolate exactly what hash map file it's in. So if there's 1,000 hash map files, I got it down to where you check the first Bloom filter to see if it's in the row. Is it in the row? Yes. And then you check the next Bloom filters and you say, oh, is it in this file? Yes. Then you read the key from the file and you got your data record.
Okay. Right? Okay. So let me go layman explain what you're doing here, see if I got it right, because I know nobody else does, and I just speak a little bit of Colin. So this is what you have done is that you're having a search like on you're turning everything into a spreadsheet. So a spreadsheet's like a two-dimensional whatever, and you're going, is it in this row? You know, okay, yeah. Then you're going to look for the column. And then you're throwing, boom, there it is. So it's, yeah, but the way you're doing that is that in the initial hashing of it, you have some kind of identifiers that allow for this.
Yeah, and it tells me from the key will hash into a specific row in the spreadsheet. Like, I don't have to search each of the rows.
Okay, is that a hash function in the beginning, or are you adding some kind of identifier to the key that you're looking for? Because you were talking about there's some kind of something you're adding to be able to look for it.
Yeah, so I have this, I hash the key first, and then I do a modulus with the key, right? So I mod it.
So you're tagging it. You're putting it in categories.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, it's kind of like a mathematical category where with just one hash, I can know exactly what row it's going to be in that spreadsheet, right? And now I only have columns to worry about, right? Now, let's say there's 1,000 hash map files. Think of those as like your columns, right? And your bucket is like your row, okay? So if I have 1 billion keys and I can do 12 million hash map or 12 million keys per hash map, then I have a theoretical data set size of 12 billion, right? But that means I have 1,000 columns that I still have to search through. And that could be 1,000 disk seeks. And this is where the Bloom filters come in, right? Because I have a row level Bloom filter first. So I first hash it and I get the row and I check that Bloom filter and basically say, is this key for sure in one of these 1,000 files or one of these 1,000 columns, right? If I get a no, then I know that key doesn't exist in the data set and then I can exit, right? Which makes it really fast for checking if keys exist, because that's a very difficult thing, right? It, and just so you know, the performance of it is 180,000 reads per second, 120,000 writes per second, and 650,000 key checks per second. And then a sequential read is about 1.2 million records per second. So it's really, 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 really fast. I mean, Google's LovelyDB maybe reads 50,000 per second, right? So this is almost 3 or 4 times as much, but that's when it has a small data set with LevelDB. Once LevelDB gets to 1 billion keys, I mean, it's going to probably read about 5,000 per second, right? It just slows down orders of magnitude because they have more data to sift through. So with ours, we got, so let's start with the algorithm. You have the key first, right? The key is what you're using to find that record. You hash that key to find the row, right? The row in your spreadsheet. And then you check your first Bloom filter, the primary Bloom filter, that tells you, is this in this row for sure? Or, I mean, is this not in this row for sure? Because a Bloom filter only tells you it is absolutely with 100% certainty not here. And if you get it that it is here, it means it could be there, right? Yeah. You get false positives with Bloom filters, so you have to tune them, right? So you have this row. Is it in this row? Checks the primary Bloom filter. If it is in the row, I say, okay, now I can start checking the columns. So each one of these columns has its own little mini Bloom filter. And I got it to the point now with only 13 bits per key, right? So that's like less than a byte per key, which is nothing. I can check with a probability of 0.1%. So 1 in every 1,000 will give me a false positive, right? So then I basically, if I have 1,000 keys, then I will only get 1 false positive for those 1,000 columns, right? Which I check the secondary Bloom filter and then say, okay, what is the one that is telling me that it is in there, right? And then I read that. So then that's the first disk seek, right? To do the index and the Bloom filters. Boom, I seek to the index file. I read the primary Bloom filter and then I read the secondary Bloom filters and I find the files that it could be in, right?
All right. I got Ernie questions here. Yeah. When you say Bloom filter, this filter is looking for certain identifiers to even let you know that it's in that row or not.
Yeah, it now, tells you, is this
let me ask the question. You're going all calling on us, all right? So I got that, and I go, all right, is that an additional bit of information in the hashing from the beginning, or do you do the hash to go through these filters to give it the identifier so that you know how to search it in the database?
Can you ask that again?
Yes, without the music. We're going to do it in the break anyway because we need to get on this other stuff, but that's what the next hour is about. All right, now we're going to get all calling up. Damn it, just strap in. Here we go. Hold on.
From the third letter of Captain Mark. The Crown's observation conditions us to be dishonest with ourselves. Therefore, constant surveillance produces a society of constant deception. Honest communication is the seed of civilized conduct. To deny us this seed is to deny us its fruits. But the Crown's primary objective is to stifle free thought itself, to make its subjects incapable of dissent. Seasoned pirates have always encrypted messages and codes and ciphers, so intercepted transmissions were incomprehensible. But today, the Crown possesses advanced tools of pattern recognition that document, profile, and predict our every move. Today, piracy requires hailing frequencies completely invisible to the Crown. We are tired of poltergeists in the static. Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels, or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
Okay, when we come back, I'm going to give a use case scenario on this, and you can help me, because this is what's going on. IPFS, there's influencer, a bunch of YouTuber guys, a couple dozen of, oh my God, YouTube's being unfair and taking down all our stuff, and we should do something. Well, because of what we did with Freedom's Phoenix, Pirates, and Corbett, I'm going, look, we did the IPFS thing, it's forever and always. Now, when you had the Plandemic movie and all of a sudden it kept getting seeded from IPFS and they couldn't take it down, a billion hits are like, damn it, we got something, man. We can't have the people being free and shit. That's not allowed. So the big thing has been search. So IPFS, it takes the metadata, and you have, when we bring over stuff from our site, it brings over the headline, the summary, the whatever. You can build the IPFS site for Freedom's Phoenix or certainly Pirates and James has all that stuff there. So I'm going, all right, how do you search it? Well, it's going to have its own master IPFS of big giant database, like a blockchain of every hash of everything of whatever. And you can go through the data field of the title or something to search. But that creates like Google servers. If I got the entire everything there and I got to search it. If you have this mechanism by which that you have identifying with the metadata that identifies to some, gives you a row and so on so that you can have a faster, this could be the search for that.
Yeah, yeah.
You see my point?
Yeah, you can. So when I say you have a key, right, this is, you just have basically to start one key, but you can make many keys mapped to the same record. So you could tag it like.
See, Ernie's. That's what I'm saying. When you're talking your thing, it's a tag. It's another, it's a search index for it, to make it so your search is faster.
But it's not a search index. That's what's so beautiful about it.
It's a tag. It's an identifier. How do you get that identifier?
You could just create an index. So
okay, you're killing me. All right. So it's done when you create, like I do an IPFS file. Are you later tagging it to put it in another searchable database, or is it part of the hashing of the original file?
So I'm not really doing file searching, so that's a bit of a different use case. This is mainly just for dealing with the blockchain primitive objects, right? So like transactions, contracts, blocks.
It's data set.
It's a data set, right? But
all right, here we're coming back. Well, I'm going to ask you that very question, and you get the answer. Because damn it. I knew it'd take up a whole freaking hour of this crap. All right, here we go.
LRN.FM.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
And you do it like this. Yeah, I declare my independence. See how easy it was, and there's no government form. Just done. Sometimes you need some help with guys like Colin, because damn. All right. So he's going to help me out here. I'm going to give a use case for this, and then he can explain it that way. That usually helps. Interplanetary file sharing system, whatever the heck, IPFS, when we have all of our data that goes into Freedom's Phoenix, we take and we put that on another database. Well, it's not that. It's just data that's sitting there on a computer that we pin. Anybody that looks for that, it replicates that data on another node, and anybody looks on that one, another node, that's how it scales. So when you have a popular PDF, a popular article, it gets more copies of it, therefore it scales and it gets faster. So this is cool. But the problem is, do we have search for all that data? It's just a bunch of hashes. Now, we would take that hash, which is gobbledygook, like a Bitcoin address, and we would put that on and link it on Freedom's Phoenix. You'll go to this article, like the Plandemic billion views of PlandemicMovie.com, right? So we put that up there, but when you search it, you're not searching IPFS. You're searching the web and Freedom's Phoenix that has the link to the IPFS. So you're doing that. Now, if I had the ability to search that hash itself, and I go, Plandemic movie, and it was in the title of kind of, and it's there.
But then you have to be able to identify it. So if I do the processing and I hash that data or that page or, you know, whatever that I'm looking for, I can also have some kind of identifier that say it's in this row, then I'm going to find this column or whatever. So my question is, when we put that up and you get the hash for the IPFS file, is your process something added on top of that or part of that?
Something added on top of it. So you have this hash for the IPFS. That's one index, right?
Got it.
We have that hash as an index basically tied. Let's say just a basic architecture would be use a register, and you keep every IPFS file with it also register, and you add your tags when you upload that file to IPFS. So, you know, if we had this searching functionality built, you know, for your specific use case right now, you would just, when you click upload, you'd be adding some extra tags.
Boom. Get it.
Right. So then what's going to happen is the LLD, right, can be your indexing service. So you have your file here, and then you have your index over here, right? So you can make multiple indexes like Ernie's favorites, Donna's favorites, whatever, right? And those tags can then be searchable, right? Because what you're doing is you're using that tag as your key. You hash that key, you find a bucket, right? You find a row, and then you check your Bloom filters, and then you find the exact file that key's in, and then you read the data record, right? Which has other information.
So this technology is something that could be put into the search function for all of IPFS, but they'd have to tag it. They'd have to go through this process to put this searchable information on there so you know where it's at.
Yeah, and that's what's so powerful about the LLD being constant time, right? Is no matter how many files you have on IPFS, no matter how much data you have to search through, when you have a tag that you're looking for a file by, it's going to be constant time to find that file, right? Because you know exactly what row it's in and then exactly what column it's in with the two types of Bloom filters. You have your primary Bloom filter to tell you, is this in this row? And then you check your column level Bloom filters, which based on the number
three
of
three jump, know where it is, Google can boom, suck it, boom, you're faster.
Boom. Yes, boom, boom, boom. Every time, no matter how much data.
The world just changed, Colin.
Yeah, it's a huge achievement, because especially for blockchain, because as your blockchain gets bigger and bigger and bigger, right? I don't know if you've tried to use other wallets, but it can take up to 5 minutes to turn on the wallet sometimes, especially when the blockchain's old, you know, a few years old. I mean, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So you have more keys to search through. So whenever Ethereum's processing smart contract, they're actually passing everything through Google's level DB, and they're having to search through all this crap to even find a smart contract, right? Or to find somebody's account or things like that, right? So all of this extra searching requires a lot of extra processing for them. With us, we don't have to go, oh, is it maybe in here? Maybe it's going to take 20 or 30 or 50 or 100, you know, depending on how big it is. Ours is boom, 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 done, right? Every time. Now, based on the probabilities and rates, I mean, I've gotten it to where it can do about 12 billion keys, and it won't slow down. I mean, well, it slows down a little bit. Like, about 100, and when I've got zero keys, it's about 180,000 reads per second. When I've got, you know, 500... 1,000 hash map files, it goes to maybe 135,000. So you lose about 40% of the processing speed. But that constant time doesn't mean it's perfectly constant. It just means the overall runtime is very constant, right? It's about the same time. That's why three seeks, right? It's going to take the same amount.
Okay, now you have been talking about this for years, and this is your goal. Was it just work to get it to what your vision was, or was there some breakthrough of, oh my God, I figured it out? What?
This was a, well, so I've been implementing it. It's mostly constant time right now, but it's still like, yeah, it would slow down over time. I mean, not as bad as other ones, right? Like, I'd run LevelDB next to the lower level database. And I mean, LevelDB, like I said, about 10 million keys, it would start falling apart. BerkeleyDB, 10 million keys, the whole thing shit the bed, right? It just, my computer locked up. I had to actually restart my computer because it locked my entire computer up. BerkeleyDB is another database that blockchains use. Your wallet.dat is stored with BerkeleyDB, right? So LevelDB handled more data better, but it still, like I said, would be about a tenfold decrease in processing capabilities when you'd even get to 10, 15 million keys.
So you're using this for what? I'm already...
It powers the entire network. A lower level database has been powering the network since about 2016, but it's incrementally been being improved. And now this is kind of the final version of it, right? Which now that I have a storage engine pretty close to perfected where it's constant time, Now I'm going to build this SQL stuff on top of it so that regular web developers can access the power of the lower level database.
Yeah, no. This is, I got use case, man. I'm saying internet 2.0 kiss my ass, and I need to know that we can have this data put up and searchable. And that's the problem with IPFS, is that to be able to search, you have to master index of everything. Well, that master index, oh my God, how are you going to search that? Well, if you do it this way, and I remember research engines in the 90s when Yahoo would go, we have cool stuff, and here's our list of cool stuff. Send in your application of cool stuff to be listed with our other cool stuff. Well, then come the robots and Google and them searching the entire everything. And I'm going, this, if it's part of, it could be like, a fork or even just another option. If we upload IPFS with this identifier as part of the process, then you have this entire database of everything IPFS that can be immediately searched because it has identifiers with the metadata of what the title is.
Can be searched in constant time.
Yeah, no. And faster than the regular web. So that makes Internet 2.0 kiss my butt faster than the other web, no surveillance, none of the other BS, and you can find stuff. How far off am I?
No, it's good. That's good. And, I mean, we can talk about this, too.
We're going to do it! Damn it! This is freaking... I've been waiting on you, man!
I can set it. I mean, it's all there. The technology's there. So, I mean, we could just upload, like, a register, on the public network. Every time you upload a file, it'll cost you one Nexus. But then in that, you put metadata and tags and stuff like that.
Done! I'm in. Commit.
Let's do it, man.
I'll come up with you. You need a little bit of money, a little bit of crowdsourced, a little bit of promotion, a little bit of something, man. I'll make you infamous, which is oftentimes better than famous. No, you work with me, I'll help you, man. I'll promote the living crap out of this, because I remember when you were talking about this before. We've been friends for years and going and calling, and I'm just like, whoa, stop, grandpa here, man. You're getting way too whatever. And a lot of people, they appreciate our conversations because they start to understand at least a use case. And what the use case is what we've been looking for is search for IPFS, but it has such a massive database that you're going through, and this makes it faster, and it could be as complicated as they want if you add these tags.
It doesn't matter how much data you add anymore. It will still be the same speed.
That's to the point that you have hundreds of gigs of terabytes of blockchain transaction of whatever, doesn't matter.
You don't even have to dig. You know exactly where it is. Boom, tell me the row, right? Then tell me the column. And now with the secondary Bloom filter, I can actually, with the 1,000 hash map files, I will only need to search one hash map because I won't get any other false positives, right? Which makes it operate extremely fast. Like right now, it has all of these columns, and without these Bloom filters, I have to check. I get the row, right? It tells me my bucket that I'm in, and then I have to go back to each one of these files. Like if I have to check if a key exists, I have to iterate this file. This is the implementation of it currently in production. Now, this new implementation with the Bloom filters, it's boom. Like hit the row, I know if it's in the row for sure, so I don't have to search all those files to see if the key exists in the primary Bloom filter. Then I get my secondary Bloom filter and I check that, and it tells me, okay, it's in this file. Then I read that file, that's my second disk seek. The first disk seek is go to the index file, read the Bloom filters, right? I check those Bloom filters, I get to the correct file, then I open that file and I read it at its binary position, and that tells me where the data is on another file. So that's where you get the three disk seeks. The first one to the index, right? Which is your basically Bloom filters, the primary and secondary Bloom filters. Then the second one is to the actual hash map file that tells you the binary position of the data over here. So I don't have to search and sift through all the data over here.
More Colin Cantrell. We're done. We're going to talk in the break and finish this up, but then we're getting to the goodie. We'll be right back.
Yeah. But it's about impossible to avoid worrying about.
Okay. God. All right. So, Donna, what we're going to do is right before we go into the next hour, we'll do a new recording. Just keep this video going, and then we'll separate it into the next one. Okay. This has big use case scenarios in my mind, but you did it for what reason? To be able to find transactions quickly?
Well, so is the blockchain, like, transactions per second is not just an instantaneous metric where you say, okay, well, I can process this many transactions per second. You also have, if I'm doing 1,000 transactions per second, then, 1,000 seconds passes by, I've added 1,000,000 keys to the database, right? So if you're using LevelDB or something, the more transactions that come through, the slower and slower it's going to get. And that's the truth with Ethereum too. Like if you try to download an Ethereum node or Bitcoin or whatever, like you have this massive data set that you have to sift through. When I'm just checking if somebody spent their coins, right? I have to search through all these different files to find that transaction to say, does it exist?
Yeah. Okay. So the audience understands. I'll give you an example. Up at Porkfest, probably, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, Derek built a, it's called the Metalith, all the things for all the money. And what it was is he loaded the entire Bitcoin blockchain into a vending machine. And you went up and you paid in Bitcoin for whatever was in there. You hit the vending thing, it took it, it dispensed the $3 whatever it was, and you could get, change in cash, or if you put cash, you could get change in cash or in Bitcoin. So a lot of people are going there using it as a transaction, exchange, whatever the hell. CNN was there. They didn't know what the hell they were looking at. They were going, oh, it's cool, and whatever. They wrote about it in some magazines and so on. And they're like, what the hell? Now, the reason that, and he got a microwave, he got a communication to one of the mountains here to be able to have internet so that it would operate, because, it's sketchy, coverage up at the campground. Now, what was the ingenious part about it is that he knew that some of these techie guys would go in and do double spends and they could, screw with you on your ATM thing. So what he did is he downloaded the entire blockchain so that he could do checks like you're talking about on transactions to make sure that it was, legit, blah, blah, blah. If you now, since then, the blockchain has gotten so much bigger to be able to do that kind of search to make sure you don't get double spends, or they, rip you off, which they can do if they, whatever. So this was Peter Todd. I remember him going on about this. We had him on the show and met him at Narcopo. He goes, look, man, these guys at the ATMs, they're going to get ripped off because they don't know what the hell they're doing in the database or whatever.
The Blockstream put in replaced by fee, which was, I think, what he was complaining about, which... What that basically means is your memory pool checks if an input was spent already. So your coins, think of an input as your coins, right? It needs to check that you're not trying to spend those coins twice.
Right.
So you have the first check in the memory pool and then the second check with the miners when the block is processed, right? But Blockstream added what's called replace by fee, where I can spend my coins, let's say to you, at zero confirmations, right? And then I can send another transaction spending the same input, but as long as I have a higher fee than the transaction I sent to you, my transaction is going to be accepted above yours, right? So I can double spend on you.
Is that still in the process? They can still do that?
They still have that. So they made zero confirmation transactions unsafe, right? Which forces people to have to use Lightning and all that other junk, right?
Which has to wait and blah, blah, blah. All right. So this is what was innovative about that, is that he had, because there wasn't this solution, he had all that information there for him to do a self-analysis to make sure that we don't get, screwed over. So that was kind of smart of him to do that. But with your thing, doesn't matter how big the blockchain data set is that you can search through it quickly and you're not having to wait.
Three disk seeks.
Boom, boom, right. Boom.
Boom, boom, boom. With, LevelDB, I'd have to check exactly how many. I guess it's in the dozens, if not more. Like, you can get up to, 100. If you're talking about a billion keys, you can have 100 disk seeks pretty easily with binary search trees. So this isn't a searching data structure. It's a deterministic. Boom, I know what row. Boom, I know what column. Boom, I know where the file is.
That's kind of how quantum works. It's kind of, it's not here.
Yeah, and it just knows, right? You don't have to search, and that's like the holy grail to me of algorithms, right? Especially with a database. And that's why I've been working in all these constant time algorithms. Like, Nexus is mostly constant time on almost every process now. I've tested it. I told you, it runs 5,000, 10,000 transactions per second, just cruising, dude. The CPU is
How much effort is it for us to... Because remember, Yahoo had back in the day, you want your cool thing listed on our cool thing, and we're just looking at cool things, send us their application of cool stuff. If we got a format for which we put IPFS up, and it includes creating this, it'd be a separate, mechanism for search, are you willing to work with us on that?
Yeah. What we do is use those three disk seeks to store a data record, and this data record would hold metadata, right? Now, what's also cool, and this would be like, you know, the checksum, you know, ciphertext, plain text, like file information.
Yeah, no, it's like on Freedom's Phoenix headline. It's the headline, the summary. But I mean, these are metadata. Freaking, we do it, and let's rock and roll. Waiting on you now.
That one piece of metadata, and what's also cool, then, so you have the key, right, that tells you row, bucket, file, data record. But now that's the keychain, right? So just think about it as over here. Disk seek. It takes two disk seeks to find the key in the keychain, and then one disk seek to actually read the record, right? So, you know, I got the bucket, find my bucket, find my column, then that tells me where this is, right? So it can be used with multiple key mappings too. So I can have one key here that's like Ernie's favorites, dun dun, tells me the data record. Another key that's Donna's favorites, dun dun, tells me the record, right? So that you just basically put in that tag what you're searching for, right? And it's indexed directly, and it has multiple keys that can map back to that same
data. No, I understand. It's like, you know, somebody putting it, you know, an embedded file on their favorites of their website of their whatever, and it goes to the same one because it has the, you know, I get it. No, I'm
Shit. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, I mean, we're pretty close to getting that, the new LOD into production. And then, I mean, with the Nexus API and stuff too, like you can actually, I don't know if you encrypt some of your files in IPFS or if you have encryption to protect some of them, but
I don't know if it even needs, I mean, it's a hash, you know, of the location loaded on a protocol. I mean, it's
depends
not,
on if you, but you can use more than just the LOD. Like you can use the crypto API or you can use the peer-to-peer API, stuff like that, so that you can actually.
All right. We'll talk more about this. Let's go ahead and we got reset for the next hour. All right, here we go. Hold on. 20 seconds will be out. All right, we're going to talk about – we can't talk about that anymore because we'll never talk about the other thing, you know? All right, so we're gonna do that. Colin Cantrell, Nexus.io, and we're going to get into the event that's going on this next week when we come back here in just a little bit. Here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have – a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared here on Declare. Your independence, me, Ernest Hancock, Colin Cantrell, Nexus.io. You know, we're unafeared, but, you know, when you find a bunch of tools to be unafeared more and get away from the man and everything, maybe you need to be a little bit afeared. Because they're going, no, hell no. You're so freaking not allowed to be free, and you're getting freed more, and damn it. All right, but we're not going to talk about that, you know, in this hour because, man, we'll never stop. And I knew this was going to happen. That's why we need 2 hours of call. All right. So This is what we're going to do. Now, you know, Colin, there's so much going on. You know, Colin's father, Jim Cantrell, is, you know, heavy in the space goodies, and Colin is also doing CubeSats and communication with and outside of the man, and kind of, you know, there's so much stuff that we can go on about. But philosophy, just you know, the peace of mind, you know, to clear your mind. Fear is the mind killer. You know, we need to, you know, whoa, we need a reset. We need to just touch and feely and kind of, you know, come on, give me a hug, give me some COVID, man. You know, it's kind of embrace in the physical meat space of, damn it. You know, so Colin sees this, and for some reason, you know, he has, and I guess because the planets are aligned, literally, you know, planetary conjunctions 2020. Now, you can go ageofaquarius.io. Age of Aquarius.
This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius, which was a big, giant popular song when I was a little kid, 60s, 70s, whenever that came out. It was, you know, the age of Aquarius. What are they talking about? Well, it's called the precession. You know, correct me when I'm wrong here, but I, as I remember, you have the zodiac is different parts. It's like a 24, 5, 6,000, you know, year, a cycle that you have the tilt of the pole as it kind of goes around the sky, and it goes from, you know, from Aries to Taurus to Leo. You know, the zodiac is these different sections that last, I don't know, a couple thousand years each one or something like that.
Yeah.
And what happens is we were in the dawning of when Christ came, that was whatever the age was, and now going, you can tell me, just a second, let me finish. You know, the age of Aquarius is where we're kind of going into now, which is, you know, peace, enlightenment, and, you know, and love, and kind of whatever. So the dawning of the age of Aquarius, that song was in reference to something astrological and real that we're going into. So it is a procession, this great procession of the pointing and the tilting of the axis of the north. You know, it's like the North Star. Sometimes it's a North Star, and then it'll be another North Star or whatever. So it moves around the zodiac, and that is just how they would progress time. Then you got the Mayan calendar. You got all this stuff that nobody knows about anymore. So this is what you're kind of the age of Aquarius. All right, tell me where I'm off. Clarify all that crap, and then tell us what you're doing.
It takes about 100 years for a new age to kick in, right? So it really started breaking down in the 50s with rock and roll. Right, as you know, there was just a massive cultural revolution. That actually, 1965 and 66 were really big years for that, and I think that's when Hair came out and all of that. But interesting enough, there's three conjunctions in 1965 and 66 between Pluto and Uranus. Uranus is the planet that rules Aquarius, right? Interesting enough, and that's when the dawning of the age of Aquarius and all of those songs were coming out. There was the cultural revolution with the Beatles, the civil rights movement. I mean, there was just riots, there was people protesting everywhere, and it was huge, right? And that was three planetary conjunctions. Pluto is the planet that kind of is destruction and change, right? And the planets that are farther out in the solar system end up having a stronger effect on us, believe it or not. So Jesus came to the age of the age of Pisces, right? The Piscean age, which is actually the last age of a great year. Then Moses before that was the age of Taurus, right? The ram. And so it's this precession of the equinox. They say it's because Earth has this wobble, right? But interesting enough, the Hindus and ancient yogis had quite a different perspective on it. And they said that we're actually in a binary solar system. And this other star is a red dwarf, right? So you can't actually see it visibly. It's only in emanating infrared light, right? And so if you have these two planets that go like this, right? This one orbit of both of these, or not planets, stars, ends up creating a 24,000 year cycle. So if you see our sun is moving in a circle of its own, and then Earth is moving in a circle of its own, that's why our pole points to a different constellation, right? And the constellation of the zodiac. Each one of them is one of 12 constellations, and it moved backwards because we're in this binary orbit. So we don't have confirmed evidence. I mean, I've seen a lot.
So this is kind of Planet X stuff. They're going, you know, I've been hearing they're going, yeah, we think Planet X might just be a mini black hole or a red dwarf or a, you
know,
something.
Red dwarf, most likely. It's the red dwarf star that's the partner star. That's why it's in our solar system now, because we're coming to this point right here, right? So the Piscean age is the last age of a great year, right? The last age of a 24,000 year cycle. So everything when it goes into Aquarius is on a massive reset. It's not just like a change from Pisces or, you know, Aries to, you know, the next. It's actually a huge reset, because all the karma that's been accumulated over the last 24,000 years is being liquidated right now, because everybody has to move in to the Aquarian age clean, right? And so it's not just a great year. You have this great year, but we also, if you think the center of the galaxy, an orbit of our solar system around the galaxy is called a galactic year. And that's about a 300 million year cycle. We're also at this age of Aquarius hitting a galactic year, right? That's part of what 2012 was symbolizing, is this full completion of a galactic year and a great year, right? So this age of Aquarius that we're going into is a pretty significant change. And that's why we're seeing so many changes right now. Now, believe it or not, there are conjunctions happening this year in 2020 that haven't happened for about 2,000 years, right? Now, this is between Jupiter Saturn, Pluto, Venus, and Mars, right? Now, these five planets, it's mainly Jupiter, Saturn, and Pluto, though, right? And so what we had on April 4th, right, was the very first conjunction. Now, at that point, if you look at coronavirus cases, right, they spiked and peaked on April 4th. Now, we had another conjunction just, I think, 2 weeks ago now. It was June 30th, right? And so it's what I've noticed, the pattern is you have about a month run up to the conjunction, and the conjunction is the peak, and then it tapers off after that, right? So as you notice, like towards the end of April, things were starting to chill out a little bit more than they were before. And then the month before, right, when did all the riots start with George Floyd? Almost exactly 1 month or 28 days before the first conjunction. It was around June 2nd, June 3rd, right? And this first conjunction too, or second conjunction, actually peaked the coronavirus again, like clockwork, perfectly like clockwork. So we have two more conjunctions this year. We have one more that's happening November 12th, right? And then another great conjunction between Saturn and Jupiter on December 21st. We also had a solar eclipse on June 21st. So that was a solar eclipse on the actual solstice, right? Which is very, very rare to happen. And we have another solar eclipse on December 17th. And then, like I said, the great conjunction between Jupiter and Saturn on December 21st in Aquarius. So this that's happening right now is Pluto is the planet of destruction and Jupiter is the planet of philosophical beliefs and structures. And Saturn's kind of the planet of kick your ass, right? Saturn's the, you know, discipline and work, right? So all of these planets coming together, their gravitational fields, if you think about it, the gravity acts instantaneously on an object, right? The gravitational field of Pluto is actually acting on us instantly. It doesn't have to travel. It's like quantum, right? It doesn't travel.
Okay,
like
quantum gravity, we got to pick it up when we come back from there because damn it, breaks, you know? We'll be right back with Colin Cantrell. We're going to get all astrologicalized beginning at the dawn of the age of Aquarius and an event where it's going to be pace. Love and, you know, and we win. We'll find out. Colin Cantrell, Nexus.io.
From the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation, a difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com.
Yep, pirates. Okay, when we come back, we left off on Pluto kicking our ass or something. Okay?
Yeah.
All right, so you know where you're at, right? All right.
Thank you.
And then yeah, this brings up, I'm going to give me 30 seconds of intro because, you know, I want to express myself, but the main thing is that to think that these small forces don't have an impact, of course they do, to the point that when they're talking about going to Mars and everything and spacefaring of in the whatever, I'm thinking, you know, I don't know, maybe low Earth orbit, you know, you might be able to get away with, but, you know, sustained periods of time of human beings being conceived, born, and living outside of our magnetic field, I don't see it. That's something we're just going to have to wait and see. I don't think you can, you know, rationalize that that doesn't have an impact.
And I mean, the term lunatic, right? I mean, it comes from lunar because, you know, I mean, when the moon's full, certain people get crazy. I mean, it's just that's where the term lunatic derives from.
Yeah, turn to a werewolf.
the moon's magnetic field and energetic field actually causes micro voltage oscillations in our magnetic field, and those affect all of us, right? And so certain people that are a little more loose, right, things come out a little faster, and then, you know, they're a lunatic, right? So people that go a little bit crazy on the full moon, it's a lunatic. It's a very well-known phenomenon, and this is such a perfect year to demonstrate how much of an effect these planets do have on us, because like clockwork, I've been watching the planets, and I can tell exactly when things are going to peak. When do I need to kind of lay low? Like, you know, I mean, when do we need to prepare for the next one? Like, what, you know, is going to be going on?
And all right, so, here we're coming back. Here we go. We're talking about
LRN.FM. That's DLive.LRN.
You can hear that?
FM.
A little bit.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
With Colin Cantrell. Now, we left it off with the influence of the planets. And I'm of the mind that, you know, to think that we're going to take humanity where we've, you know, evolved, developed, called home for a gazillion years of whatever here on Earth, and we're just going to go to a space station outside our magnetic field or Lagrange points with the moon or on the moon or Mars. You know, the gravity thing is, you know, definitely going to have an impact, but I'm being outside of our magnetic field, and Mars doesn't have a magnetic field. So
and,
I'm just.
And our Schumann frequency, too. You know, I've explained this before, but Earth is has a frequency between the ground and the upper ionosphere. It's like a big capacitor, right? And it has this vibration. It's called the Schumann frequency. It's a measurable phenomenon. This is nothing mystical. And it usually is about 7.83 hertz, but now it's been spiking close to 100 hertz more recently, right? And that affects all of us as well. The Schumann frequency actually vibrates at 432 hertz. It's
is this some of the signs that the pole may shift or something? Is that part of that?
The poles are already shifting. They're about 30 degrees off north right now, so they're moving south right now as well. So that's another phenomenon that's happening. I mean, this is...
But the point that I wanted to make before you continue is the point is that we have there is literally a spark of life. Where you have conception, there's a little spark, and it's a zinc, release ion something. I mean, you literally can watch it happen. Boom, it's fertilized. So this spark of life, you know, it was amazing to me years ago when they started witnessing this. And during that such itty-bitty little kind of all forces, gravity force. This is why they say, I can't tell you over my life how many people just kind of go, you must be an Aries. And I go, okay, what does that mean? Means, you know, it's Ernie, he's an Aries, you know, that kind of deal. And I'm going, you know, so there are personality traits that go along with different things. Some people believe. But I've had a lot of people do that, you know, and they don't know me. And I'm just going, damn, man, what is this thing? So as we move through space, as we travel, as we change our circumstance, as, you know, gravitational force and the precession and the Earth's poles change, all this, it has an effect on just a freaking moon mood. And then it's like, you know, the column was saying, you know, lunatics is, you know, full moon, you turn into werewolf kind of stuff. So I'm just, there's, and it has, we see it throughout life on this planet, different phases of the moon and the sun and the seasons, it has enormous impact on everything from rutting to just personality. So I'm going, all right. So now we're going into this age of Aquarius. You're having this event. Let's talk about the event. And you wanted to finish up with what you were saying about Pluto and how it influences go. Whoa, 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 whoa. Did we lose? Wait a minute. All right, Donna's going to, you know, get him back up. Is it connecting? Gosh darn it. Man, that was all good setup. Well, you know, this is, yeah, a lot of these questions are going to come up. You know, it's going to be, oh, there's no internet. Are we out? Network, we lost. No, I can tell the you know, the internet was turned off. Yeah, go run, follow the cord. Oh, that sucks. That was getting into good. Yeah, we should talk about the event to begin with. All right, well, I'll go ahead and read this into the archive, make sure we got it. There are a lot of events happening this year, part of this due to a series of planetary conjunctions that have not happened for 2,000 years. Gravitational fields act instantaneously on every object, which is what he was getting into. I wanted to, you know, do that. Okay, let me join from browser. There is a problem joining the meeting from the Zoom. Join from browser. Dang it. All right, I'll let Donna deal with that. Yeah, something happened with the internet here. Yeah, see, you get into this stuff. The man. It must be important because the man. And when massive gravitational fields collide with one another in conjunctions or oppositions, we feel these effects on Earth. The same is true for the full moon. Lunatic derives from the term lunar, where individuals become irate and emotional during full moon cycles. Free market volatility increases during full moon cycles, and planetary conjunctions are like the big league form of this effect. The last time there were conjunctions with Pluto on a larger scale were the years of 65-66 during the Cultural Revolution. This was three conjunctions between Pluto and Uranus, which was the dawning of the age of Aquarius, since Uranus is the planet that rules Aquarius. Now here we go again in 2020. So it looks like it's trying to connect. I don't think it's us. Well, that doesn't mean anything. You know, check the whether it sees it on the Wi-Fi on the phone. Hold on a second, guys. We're trying to get this taken care of. Okay, I'll go ahead and finish this intro. Now, here we are again in 2020 being hit with three major conjunctions between power planets Jupiter, Saturn, and Pluto. The first conjunction was April 4th, the second June 30th, and third to be November 12th. As I'm sure you can see, each conjunction has brought with it lots of changes. We have a final great conjunction between Saturn and Jupiter on December 21st, which happens in Aquarius, surprise, surprise. So by the end of the year, we will have taken another major leap into the age of Aquarius. This process began in the 50s with rock and roll breaking down the old age structures and is estimated to be complete by 2050. The age of Aquarius represents innovation, free thinking, freedom, and expression. It is also the first sign in a great year, 24,000 years, meaning that karma that had accumulated over this last great year had been liquidated through the Piscean age, last 2,000 years, and now three-quarters of the way through the transition into Aquarius, which is like 100 years, transition part. We are going to accelerate in the process of rebalancing karma. This may look different for different people, so don't mistake the chaos happening now as something wrong, but rather it's just the effects of many timelines, karmic consequences, and stories resolving their imbalances so we can drive forward into Aquarius with clean hearts and minds. You know, cool. You know, I'm in. We can do that. All right. So, data connection. Wow, they've shut off everything. Man. I so want to do this show now. Yeah, try your hotspot. Yeah, Ernie doesn't not allowed to have data. Okay, all right. Yeah, see, one of the things that we do is we have on the bus, we have AT&T, two SIM cards to do that, a Verizon modem that goes into our router that goes throughout the bus that has a cell booster. But you know, where we are now, there's almost no signal anywhere, so we are Ethernet straight into Jay's router, which has been, you know, fine, you know, for everything, but then all of a sudden, boom. And, you know, it's just, this rarely happens, but it's almost like half the time I talk to you, it happens, you know? So, somebody loves you. No, it's the internet. It's just that it's all internets, you know, because you do hotspot on this phone, hotspot on that phone, you know, that did, and it's like you're not allowed. We just want to explain it to you, you know, Well, I want to finish this, and you know, maybe today won't be good, but before we leave this week, I wanted to get, you know, we're right getting into the good, and we could do another, you know, planetary conjunction promotion or something, you know. Yeah, no, we're just getting into the good. This is awesome.
I know, right?
All right, but we'll go ahead. Donna will communicate with you if we do a podcast or whatever, because we got, you know, a lot of things going on. Okay, hold on. She's doing something. Does it say it's on now? Okay, it shows we're connected to the network now. Now we got to get, hey, guys, you know, we're working. Every time I talk to Colin, man, it's, you know, this is a Colin thing. You know, it said, you know, I got him on the phone here. We need to see if we can get Skype. Just don't do video. Just when you go into the Zoom thing, just do audio. No, so it saved the bandwidth. Okay. Donna's, you know, setting it up again. Hold on. Start.
There you are.
There it is.
There it is.
Yeah, no video.
We can try video, see if you have
no, hell no. You know, okay. I got you know, slides for you anyway.
All right, cool.
We'll go with we'll go from here. Guys, I'm sorry about that. It's internet, and we're doing backup. And this is a common thing with Colin and I when he comes in the studio and stuff. You know, it's always something. It rarely happens, but I mean, if I had to do a chart.
Jammed your Wi-Fi the other day, too. Remember, your internet kept cutting out at your house. I remember, like, one of the more recent interviews, and we found the internet company. Remember, they kept coming to your house to try to figure out what was wrong with your modem, and they said that there was a signal that was jamming your Wi-Fi. Remember that?
Yeah.
They said that there was an external signal coming in and jamming it.
Like, yeah, I mean, it was one of the times was a termination port at the end of it was a mechanism by which, you know, this stuff could, you know, all right, well, let's get to it while we got it here, because I want to make sure we don't miss this stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, wait. I gotta start the recording again on the video. And start recording. And we're gonna start streaming again. Damn it, I'm hoping that doesn't, you know, tax it. All right, we're back with Colin Cantrell. They tried to stop us. But fortunately, we got like four backups. We have, you know, Wi-Fi we set up through, Derek did through a Raspberry Pi that manages all Wi-Fis that we can do. Then we have modems, two SIM cards on AT&T and one on Verizon, and then, of course, the Ethernet. It was the Ethernet that they, you know, the internet here with them doing whatever, man. All right. So what we want to do, we're going to go into the break. We missed like a segment here almost. And kind of surprised we got it back. Donna, you know, went through different whatever the hell. She fixed it. So, you know, power to her. Now, we were getting right at the end of this segment now. Go ahead and tell us what we were talking about. We were getting into the alignment of the planets and the gravitational forces that have an impact on conception of life, and kind of, you know, it's not like it's no impact, and stuff is a happening, and that's leading into an event that you're doing next week. Tell us all about it. Go. Are you there? Oh, we lost him again. Some bitch. Okay, well, you know, but still, here, hey. I got the network still, so let's get them back on. Just make it go work. All right, guys, sorry. We'll, you know, let you know.
1,500 updated references, new cartoons, and a forward by Dr. Ron Paul. With discounts for multiple book purchases, the fourth edition of Healing Our World is a great gift for the liberals, pragmatists, environmentalists, and Christians in your life.
I'll just record it, because we're recording the audio, so we'll go ahead and do that. Come on, get him on. Let's go. Zoom. Oh, he is? Yeah, are you on, Colin?
Yeah, I'm on.
Okay, he's on. I got him. I leave it alone. We're good. All right. I got recording. So we're not going to stream. So we're doing, we got the, God dang it, man. All right. We're coming back in at 47 after. All right. So when we come back, God, man, don't do any video or don't do anything, because we're.
I'm on audio.
Okay. We're doing audio and we're recording the video on this to get it in. But what we're going to talk about when we come back is the event. We got to get to the – that's the last segment. We better get that event in or we ain't going to get it in. Okay.
Sounds good. So we'll kick off with the event when we get back.
All right. So you going to homeschool now?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm already developing a curriculum and stuff. We've been doing like homeschool books. We got like a whiteboard set up and all that stuff. And we're going to start kind of creating a neighborhood homeschool.
Awesome. Now you have what? You have a son and a daughter, don't you?
Yeah. 6 and 7, almost 7 and 8 now.
Okay, and all my kids, it looks like they're going to homeschool. They've already been getting curriculum. They're, because this fall it's going to be mass Marxist indoctrination. They're getting ready. Yeah. Here we go, man. They're going to you want a babysitter? Well, they're going to be Marxist little communist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're trying. That's why this event's really important. You know, we're hoping that it'll help, kind of like shine a light in the darkness right now. I mean, a lot of people. When you don't see the higher path, right, the higher order of everything, then it seems kind of scary and freaky, right?
Well, should I prepare a PowerPoint or slides or something, or just presentation?
Do it however you want to do it. We're setting up, I think we're going to have something ready because Lynn wanted to do slides too. So we should have something set up. We just need to track down a projector and everything. We're doing this thing super low budget.
Yeah.
It's at this at the Unity Through Community, which is an art gallery that I started with some friends out here. So it's gonna be cool. We're creating like an Aquarius vibe with it, you know. Like,
all right. Well, I'll come up with some slides. We got some goodies,
Your imagination speech is a good one. Like, reawakening the imagination of kids and things like that. I always love that speech. But whatever you want to do.
Yeah, it's all about that same kind of crap. I'm in. I'm telling you, it's going down to what the big bad guy's biggest threat is. It's family. It's just down to individual and children of, none your business. And this whole tour has been two things. One, do I own myself? Do I have to be forced notions and potions from the crown kind of crap? Mandatory whatever the hell shot. And then if it pleases the crown, can I occupy my own land? You put the tent up in front of town hall, but you do it on your own land. They send you to jail without an occupancy permit. And I'm going, what the hell? So these two things kind of dovetail into, you're living in tyranny. And I just want them to say it, so they're going to be proud to say it. They want to say it. That's for damn sure.
Man, like, it's kind of like you say, like, we are not afraid, right? And this event is out there. We are not afraid. Like, we will go.
All right, here we're coming back. Here we go.
Make sure you favorite the LRN.FM Twitter account so you can receive our tweets at twitter.lrn.fm. That's twitter.lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone.
We're here.
And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you?
So,
Hold on a second.
Okay, we're back. Now, this is, Colin, man, he brings with him all kinds of internet problems because the man don't want whatever, So, Donna, chewing gum and baling wire and scotch tape, and we got, where we can finish the show and get the signal. But we're not going to be able to stream it because it's a lower bandwidth. Now, what the event where we were talking about is the influences of the planets and going into the age of Aquarius that, since the 50s, and we're going to be going to this like 100-year transition, doing and it has an impact on people of whatever the heck. So,
yep.
He has an event coming up next week, Planetary Conjunctions 2020. So, tell us about it, why you're doing it, what to expect. Go.
Well, we're doing this event to kind of demonstrate, what is this new age going to look like? What is the world going to look like in the next 50 years? And we want to really help people start to be able to imagine that and see that. And see the higher order of everything. And that's why we're going to be talking about the planets. And we're going to have a lot of different types of speeches. We're going to talk about the economics and cryptocurrency and then protecting yourself with like Title 18, Section 242, deprivation of rights under color of law, and reestablishing liability when it comes to vaccinations, which you can use medical malpractice laws to reestablish liability, right? And basically just putting a big nail in the coffin of all of this tyranny. And the way we do it is just by coming together, gathering together, the gathering of the tribes, gathering of people. And, like with the 2017 conference, just raise the vibration, spread the love, and help people see the higher order. Because if you're trying to navigate inside a city and you don't have the 50,000 foot view like a GPS, it's a lot more difficult to navigate, right? And that's kind of what's happening is we're in the city, right? And so this event hopefully will help people start to see this higher perspective and see that there is a higher order to everything, and that what's happening right now may seem like it's chaotic, but it's actually a part of a higher order that is transitioning us into this new age, right? This age of Aquarius, which is the end of so many different cycles, the great year, the galactic year, precession of the equinox, all of these things. And it's really, we're going into a bright future, and the powers that were, they know it. That's, you know, one reason they're trying to use these Pluto conjunctions. I saw Forbes try to say that this is the year that astrology is proven wrong because of these conjunctions, and there's nothing that's going to happen in the second conjunction and blah, blah, blah. But like clockwork, it, you know, came and happened, right? And so this event's going to be a very well-rounded perspective from many different people, you know, covering a wide range of things in order to just kind of help empower people and help people realize that everything's okay and be a resource and gather together. And, you know, hopefully that this, you know, Age of Aquarius Festival will, you know, be something that other people can do. So we're going to do one in Tucson and then LA and Texas. And so we're looking and creating a model and a template that other people can apply in their own region, right? And we want to make them celebrations, like celebrating life and, you know, creation and seeing all these new solutions and what the world looks like. Because a lot of people are waking up right now, and it's scary because they're just waking up to a lot of problems. They're waking up to tyranny, and they don't know that there's other opportunities for us to protect ourselves. And that's what we hope this event will really do, is help people feel, okay, there is a higher order. Everything's going to be okay. The world's changing for the better. And it happens when all of us start working together. So, you know, it's also a statement of we're not afraid. I mean, it's right.
You know,
here,
we're going to be creating some events. We're going to different things, you know, the Love Bus and participating in other events and creating our own, and people will have some speakers and everything. Are you willing to go to some of these around the country?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we need to get word out, man. Like, people need to know.
Yeah, no. We got a thing. It's probably going to be like the third weekend in August in Upper Michigan, because Upper Michigan needs some love, you know.
Yeah, they do. The East Coast needs a lot of love, man.
But you know, the thing is that Upper Michigan, there might as well be another planet, and they're like, I don't know what the hell the governor here is talking about. There's a bunch of libertarians that, you know, want us to go. We're in. And we have some other things like New Jersey and Connecticut and Ohio.
Yeah,
and
I know what you need, man. I mean, I can code on the road and everything.
Yeah. I'm thinking. Yeah, I think that'd be cool just for the video, just for the chill. You know, I'm not planning on it being a billion people. I'm not doing it for, you know, I'm doing it for the activists, for the people that, you know, inspired you. You start something, and I think you'd be very inspirational for something like that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. I mean, that's what we're here to do, is like help inspire people, show people that we have solutions to the problems, right? This conference is all about solutions, not problems, right? And that hopefully will help inspire people. And then we're going to tie together some festivities with it, right? So we're going to have like live painting. We're going to have music, you know, bands are playing. I'll play some piano, so you'll get to see me, you know, play. And I might do some guitar stuff too. So
don't you play the cello also or something?
Yeah. I might play cello with Larkin. He plays piano. So we'll do some jams and stuff. And like, I got lots of musician friends here. So we're kind of bringing together many different people. We're going to have some talks on shamanism, right? On, you know, I mean, we're going to have yoga. It's just, and then we may even do like, you know, have Cambo ceremonies and stuff like that if people want to, you know, do detox and stuff like that. It's just, we really want it to be like, this is what the future looks like. And these events, right, are the living embodiment of that Age of Aquarius.
Well, you have kind of a two-day thing. Does one day have a flavor over the other?
Yeah, the first day is kind of your more talks, like technical, you know, learning about these. And then the second day is kind of more festival, where we're going to have more music playing. We're still kind of ironing out the details as far as like, are we going to do a stage here or there?
Yeah.
But yeah, the second day is kind of more like spiritual yoga, consciousness. And the first day is going to be, you know, the technology and, you know, protecting ourselves legally and things like that. Because like, we have a lot of things. People think, oh, wait, you know, vaccinations, they've completely removed all liability. Like February 4th, they said, oh, well, there's absolutely no liability for any COVID vaccination now because there's an emergency, right? So now they've actually reduced liability even more from the vaccine courts, right? So what you can do is you just reestablish liability by making the doctor sign a liability agreement. And if the doctor refuses to sign a liability agreement, then he has admitted guilt and knowing that it's bad for you and knowing that it could kill you. and you can legally refuse it under medical malpractice laws, right? So there's a lot of different things that we can do. There's also the UCC-1. And so we really want people to come there, you know, anybody that's feeling a little afraid or worried or any, and just feel the vibe, man. And we're going to create
UCC-1, retention of rights under commercial code of whatever.
I think UCC-1 is like elevating yourself from a debtor to a creditor, and you claim your property. Like, so you, right now, everybody's born as an employee of, or actually property of the United States of America Corporation, right? That's why you can't kill yourself. It's illegal to kill yourself because it's damaging government property, right? Because everybody is actual property. So what this does is it elevates you from a debtor where you're born in debt to a creditor, because they actually do exist above the law in a lot of ways, because the way that they designed the system, they have all these back doors and they've created, you know, trusts. And like Tim started to crack in on what they've been doing too with, like, you know, tax havens and things like that. They've created all these back doors in their system.
Okay, we're going to go along a little bit. We're going to hit it, you know, pretty soon here on the live show. We missed, you know, some time here. So give out the information, where to go and find out and what.
The Aquarius Festival is going to be on July 21st and July 22nd at 55 West Southern Avenue. It's right by Yucca Tap Room. It's at Unity Through Community Arts Center. And it's the first day. We're packed full. We have like 10 speakers confirmed right now, and I think 3 bands, and then lots of live artists. And I got, you know, more and more kind of flowing in every day. So the first day format is going to be more informational, like understanding.
Ageofaquarius.io.
Yeah, and ageofaquarius.io. It's just emerging as a website, but that website's eventually going to become like the Wikipedia of information, where we can actually go through Tao standardization processes to standardize information, such as, well, what do all the planets mean? We can standardize it. There's a lot of new age malarkey out there. And so what we're really hoping to do is ground all of this and help people understand the physics and science behind all of this consciousness. And then, you know, eventually start creating these working groups where we can standardize this information and have a fully decentralized information portal that we can host some of that on IPFS, on Nexus, you know, do integrity checking and have it as a safe net service as well, so that eventually, you know, you'll use it as a resource, like, you know, one of which is banners too, like what we're creating, which is, you know, using Title 18, Section 242, which is deprivation of rights under color of law, to protect ourselves against mask laws, right? Or protect ourselves against, you know, saying you can't have gatherings or things like that, because there are laws that are in place that have existed way before all of this. And the governor can't just sign executive orders. You know, I mean, it defeats the purpose of a multi-branch government. So there's a lot of unconstitutional stuff happening right now. And they're trying to test how much we will let happen to us. And that's why it's really important right now.
Yeah, no, the resistance is not futile. And it is going to be just with love and a smile. And you're assuming we give a crap what you guys say.
We're going to shift the energy, right? Just like the 2017 conference, right? Like, believe it or not, that 2017 conference was at the Aspen Institute, which was where the Bilderberg groups planned all this stuff, like the Federal Reserve and all their wars. If you noticed all the roundtable rooms, right? Yeah. We unknowingly ended up renting that place, right? But it's kind of funny because we shifted the energy. There was right, such a high vibe at that conference.
Ageofaquarius.io.
Cryptocurrency.
Okay, wait. No. I got to finish network. Boom. Okay. Now we got more bandwidth. All right, we can continue for a little bit, you know, and kind of make sure we get everything in. But we had to get the information on the actual event, and I'll give a presentation on the first day and do what it kind of conjunctions in with, you know, the Love Bus and what we're doing and all that. Also, you know, there's going to be plenty of opportunities. We'll work it out to get Colin to come speak and be part of this message and different things that we're doing, because I can see that. I had a long conversation with some of our patrons and stuff last night or yesterday afternoon, and I'm going, man, we're coming across, like, tomorrow I have, you know, the big bad pedo them, you know, family of the, you know, the evil love, and you kind of, I'm like, you know, I don't mind doing that stuff, and so, you know, but I'm, you know, it's not my, I don't want to beat them, I just want to outlast them, I want to avoid them, I want to highlight them. I'm not, you know, there is no beating evil, it's just not participating in it. It's, you know, being the light. Don't get sullied and dirty and messy and dip your toe in. I mean, you know, ew, the biggest weapon against them is is ignoring them, you know, not being them, overwhelming them, you know, breathe them out, you know, with your own, because that's what they're doing.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at it, like, just this is kind of a construct that I've kind of found inside the verbiage, right? The vibration of the word evil, right? Live spelled backwards is evil, right? So this is just like a little proof, I guess you could say.
Whoa, I never even thought of that. Holy
yeah,
shit.
Live spelled backwards is evil, right? So the opposite of life, right, is evil. So if you look, what is life then? Let's define life. Well, life is growth, expansion, learning, right? So the opposite of that would be death, decay, chaos, right? So evil is essentially a construct of death, right? But in the sense that what happens when you have an error that doesn't get corrected? The error compounds upon itself, right? Until that error becomes so great that it becomes incorrectable within the span of a lifetime. That is where somebody experiences quote unquote evil, because their error has perpetuated past the point of recourse, where it's impossible for them within that short span of time to actually correct that error. So those that are evil, them, they, those, whatever, are just agents of error. So living in error is a form of that evil. So you don't fight error, you just create truth, right? That absolves error, it corrects error. And that's the important thing about what we're going into this age, is like, we don't need to fight, we don't need to battle them. We just create things that show how much error they are in, right? And you help correct that error in other people, right? So it's as simple as just looking the other way and creating more truth. And that's kind of the antonym. That's what corrects all of these things.
Yeah, and I'm with you, brother. And once you get, you know, my thing is, I word it as, you know, just general public opinion that, you know, they suck and here's the solution, and, you know, and they're done, you know. But I'm glad you're doing this. This is the conversation. This is what happened. I had a conversation with some patrons and the money people over, just kind of getting a beat on what the hell we need to keep the focus on. Well, of course, we knew it was going to be live. And then I was talking to Tim Pachote, and he, you know, prompted me to check my signal. And there's your message, you know, about this thing going on. I'm at boom, and we're going to happen to be. I'm glad we got that message, because we could have been coming in like 2 hours after and missed it. So we, you know, arranged our travel so that it looks like we're going to come in the night before. So we'll probably be there in the morning. So
you'll be there. Yeah, you'll be there to you listen. We're going to do some nice piano interludes in the morning, and then like kick off with the speakers. And then the next day we'll do yoga classes and stuff like that. So it'll be a really cool mix of many different types of information. You know, we'll go into physics, we'll go into astrology, we'll go into software engineering, we'll go into hardware, you know, electrical engineering with the satellites. And it's going to be a really well rounded type of information. We have a lot of diverse speakers, so it's going to be really cool to see, you know, combining all this information together in an innovative way. That's a very Aquarian thing to do, right? Aquarius is all about free thinking, it's about innovation, right? And it's also the bringer of water, right? That's what it symbolizes, water, magnetism, right? Which represents life, energy, emotion. So it's the bringing of life, right? So we're going into this new age. Now, the other cool thing about this Piscean age being the last one is all of their karma is being liquidated. If you notice people, they don't get away with anything anymore. I mean, shit catches up to them real quick, and it's only going to continue to accelerate, right? So it's
especially
part of
especially with IPFS search.
Fuck yeah, man. No, I mean, that's really cool. It'll be a fun use case to play around with you too. I'd totally be happy to help you build that. Like, it'll be, I remember was talking about this for a while, and I was like, okay, well, how could we do this? How could we do that? But you're going to really like the LLD file system. So I guess LLD, FS, whatever. IPFS has a huge issue where it doesn't have incentives to run a node, right? Same with Bitcoin. That's why there's not very many Bitcoin nodes. Now, you know, if more people are watching the video, get seated a little bit more, but it really only is just based off of somebody being a good Samaritan. So the LOD file system is going to allow you to monetize your hard drive space and pay other people in order to host some of that data, right?
Okay, whoa, 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 back up. Now, this is the one thing that we were real supportive of Made Safe, and they were going to do their thing. And then we have IPFS, which is a product of Filecoin or something. They were going to kind of do the same thing. You get paid for storage of data and dissemination of data, but then it gets gamed and all that kind of stuff. For me, it had value just for me to be able to have it uncensored, what it costs for me to have a node to be able to do this. Now, you're saying that there is a mechanism by which that can be monetized and not gamed. More on that. What?
Yeah, so that ties in with the whole satellite, too, because the satellites are going to be running the LOD file system. But it's just going to become a more premium data layer. So the data is going to have a free market dynamic and economics associated with it. So the cost to host on a satellite or the cost to host on like the ground is going to be based just completely on supply and demand. So you'll essentially be able to sell some of your hard drive space and then pay other people to host some of your data for you so that you have this gamified system. But it can't really be game, like the way that they've all, like Filecoin and store and whatever, they're thinking in the emission, the minting, right? Which creates just a massive issue. You have bots, you have all this stuff. There's so many ways that it can be gamed. This is just going to be a simple peer-to-peer contract, smart contract between the host, right? The person that's hosting the data and the client, the person that is the one that's submitting the data. And so when people deploy these satellites, they're going to be able to monetize their satellites by selling and leasing some of that data for other people to be able to utilize. So it's an extension of the LOD file system that basically is going to create the foundations of this new internet model where everybody can get a piece, right? Everybody can have a piece.
Okay, so how is it? It's a contract. So like what? A smart contract, an executable contract, a track contract? If it has some kind of a contract with numbers or events or times, or how is that not gamed?
Well, it's just as simple as a hosting system. So I'm going to pay you, right? There's a selection algorithm, which is based on reputation. So nodes that have a higher availability than other nodes are going to end up with a higher reputation over time. So they're going to get selected to first to host the data, right? And they may even be able to charge a little bit more. But it's just a simple peer-to-peer contract, Ernie, right?
No, they're hosting the data, but they also, one, you got to show that they're hosting it, I guess.
Hosting.
So and then the dissemination of the data, do they get paid for?
Per request. They get paid on a monthly basis for servicing a certain amount of data. So you're not, proof of storage is malarkey. Anybody that tells you that is just, they don't understand how proof mechanisms work. In order for a proof mechanism to work in a blockchain scenario, it has to be asymmetric, which means it's very easy to verify, but very difficult to create, right? So that's why nobody's been able to pull off these incentivized file hosting systems, because they've been thinking about it in the wrong way, right? What we're doing it is putting it in a simple peer-to-peer hosting model. So I'll pay you, Ernie. Yeah, you've got 5 gigabytes. I'll say, okay, well, I need to store 5 gigabytes. So I'm going to store 5 gigabytes on your hard drive and, you know, 5 gigabytes on someone else's. And I'll obviously have redundancy on it. And then let's say I go to you, Ernie, and I say, hey, you know, I want my file and your internet's down. Okay, well, I didn't get my file from Ernie, so I'm going to put that as black check mark, you know, and then I ask again, you know, in an hour. Oh, Ernie still doesn't have it. I ask again in a day. Ernie still doesn't have it. I'm going to terminate the peer-to-peer hosting contract, and then you delete the data off your computer. And there's no way you can game it because you have the integrity and the checking of that. If it's there, just done automated through the system, and it will ding your reputation.
Okay, well, what if, you know, like with IPFS, I have my own servers, like we have a server farm, whatever, and we got, you know, laptop underneath the desk of whatever, and our Raspberry Pis with the 2 terabyte, you know, external drive of yada, 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 our pirate boxes. So we do that, and we go, okay, I have it, and the incentive, you know, is for me is just I got my own pen files and I can still interface with the protocol and I'm not paying anybody, right?
Yep, because you're hosting your own, right? So the LOD file system will work just that way. You can enter in a peer-to-peer contract with yourself for $0, right? And that's basically how that would work with you. But let's say you didn't fill up all your 2 terabytes. You have like 1 terabyte spare and you're still waiting to fill it up. You can enter in and you basically broadcast out to the network to say, hey, I have a terabyte available. And based on your reputation, people will select you and say, oh, well, I need a gigabyte stored on there. And then they'll pay you, right, as a type of hosting system. So it'll be a monthly hosting fee.
And basically, there's like some kind of regular pinging to make sure that the file is available for download.
Yeah.
Well, then what's the bandwidth, you know, measurement?
Yeah, well, you don't necessarily have to measure the bandwidth. You just have to measure the availability of the file, right? So, I mean, if you have
availability ain't shit. If I want, you know, a 4 gig video of it's not, I can't get it.
Well,
I mean,
yeah, if somebody, then that just dings the availability. So somebody's going to have a minimum hardware requirement. I mean, you're going to have to deliver files. If you're hosting 5 gigabyte files, you're going to have to deliver them within a reasonable time. Otherwise,
but that is tracked. You
is going to terminate the contract.
But right? That is tracked or some way to evaluate that.
Yeah. I mean, you evaluate it just from the peer to peer. Like I go to you, Ernie, and I say, I need my file. And I ask you once, don't give it to me.
Okay. So this is a protocol. This is just, you know, its own separate internet, yes, of peer to peer of you're creating your own IPFS.
Yes, and it gamifies the entire internet model, and it also gives people the opportunity that may just run their computer all day, right, to sell some of their extra hard drive space and earn a passive income.
Yeah, no, but I still need an IPFS search. I mean, you could do the same thing, the hashing, and do that because that would be a backup to that.
You'll be able to create – so we're creating a file system API right now that's going basically do that for you. You'll be able to create your tags in the file system API, and then – we have a storage parameter that you can say IPFS is your storage medium or local disk is your storage medium or whatever else. So this file system API will make it really easy for you to do that. It will automatically generate the file's metadata. And then if you want to add indexes, you know, searchable tags, you can just add those tags to the API. And it's simple for you to do.
Yeah. No, this is what we were talking about. See,
we made a just button for developers, basically.
Okay. Do you know Colin Pape over at Presearch?
Yeah.
Okay. So Colin goes, we were yakking about this a couple of narcopocos ago, and he put up one of his Polish guys, developer, in with Derek to talk about, you know, kind of in the search engine thing and, you know, a lot of this kind of stuff. But they get into, you know, of course, they want it profitable, you know, how can they, and it's kind of complex, and then, you know, never mind. So I'm going, you know, this really needs, so Derek is willing to work. He can do it. He's just, you know, I mean, I got a life and, like, you know, plowing to do, and I'm in Maine and summer only lasts so long kind of thing. So if you or you have a team or something that's ready to do this, we put Derek with you for at least a conversation or a couple of hours Zoom of, you know, what do we need to do? And then I got money to pay for some of the developers that he can work with that he uses for. He's a principal in Travel Mailbox. He's a head IT guy and started a company and got a percentage of whatever. That's kind of his, you know, day job income. But the and he has a staff that he can work with that he can task to do this kind of stuff that want to work on this kind of stuff. Somebody pay me money. So I'm going, look, man, I got funding. I just need to, you know, have a direction or a project or something. Yeah, you'll work with us.
Yeah, I'll do architecture for you guys, no problem. It's bread and butter for me, and it's fun. It's a good use case. It builds out our requirements for the API.
Yeah, no, this is an example of.
He can build on Nexus, like using this file system. The file system API right now, though, is not complete, right? So we're working on that API right now. So I'd say within about a month, 2 months, we're going to have this new hard fork release with all these new goodies, including a mobile wallet, by the way. That, and actually your mobile wallet runs a node on your phone that's a light node that only requires 200 megabytes of disk space, and you get full blockchain verification on your SIG chain so that you don't need to have the entire data set like the Bitcoin blockchain to protect against double spends. You can just do it right there on your local device, and it's fully trustless and fully decentralized using this basically protocol I created called Client Mode, where you only have to download your SIG chain and the block headers, and then you use the Merkle proofs, like I was telling you, in order to verify that transaction actually exists in the blockchain. And so you have it a fully trustless node. So that mobile framework is kind of integrated with it. But that's a bit of a tangent. Sorry, but the API is all...
No. Now's a good time to talk to Derek when you're at this stage, because he's going to have some input.
And Derek, as long as he has a couple web developers, he can do it. There's nothing fancy that you have to do to work with the Nexus API. I mean, a regular JavaScript, you know, HTML web developer can code on Nexus. So we've made a just button.
All right. I want to have a tomorrow night is not great. Thursday, are you available in the afternoon, evening, or something?
Yeah, I can do Thursday.
Okay, Donna, set up Thursday a thing with Colin and Derek. You know, see if we can get Derek on, even if it's later in the evening, you know, for us. Probably better for him.
Too. We can set you up your own Nexus too. You can either do it on the public network, or you can use your own Nexus, your own private network, to manage just your files.
I just want to talk about the capability of what we've been talking about, because this is what, see, Derek's thing is like, I'm tired of creating everything for everybody. He goes, we did it to show that you could do it. And these guys are like, well, you know, because what happens is all of these, you know, venture capitalists for the man of Google, FBI, of whatever, they're scraping up all the developers to go enslave me. You know, and I'm like, you know, shit, is there a freedom guy out there somewhere? What the fuck? You know, so he has the capability, but he's like, I got to do it for everybody. Hell, I'll walk him through or help, or you guys come up with a protocol. Because that's what I was going to say about Presearch, is that they were talking about creating, and another group out of the Philippines that, you know, wanted to be our buddies for a while. And but they, of course, they want to do what they want to do. And the main thing was, Derek wanted to be at the planning stages in the beginning for the formatting of the search, for the tagging, for, you know, the submission of the IPFS into the system, for the, you know, that's what he goes, because he could see it's going to be the actual submitting of the data to get your markers and so on. You know, that's from the at the beginning of this, so that as you add into the system of Internet 2.0 Kiss My Ass, that it actually is Kiss My Ass. You know, you get it at the foundation level, which is where you're at. That's why I want you talking to Derek now. Hello? I lose him again. God dang it. All right. We're going to call it. That's good enough. Yeah, we got what we need. You know. All right, peace, guys. We're on it. We'll have it for you. And I don't know what this internet thing is. We'll see what's up. Peace.